Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Manly thing to do to clap before you get your business
on. No, it's
on.
Not.
Yeah,
sure
if you're Richard
Way
Simmons.
To start it out, I'd be like, hey, everybody. I'm going to clap real quick to let you know I'm here. I'm not going to use my voice. I'm going to use my hands.
Here's the deal.
I'm here.
I don't control what makes you feel manly, but that was manly. It's like it's left over from my lifting days, you know, when I got the dust on me.
Oh, yeah, the lifting days.
Yeah, totally.
That must have been the same year you tried to invent the square hula hoop. Fail.
Anyhoozer, you're listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for joining us here on a brisk Monday night. Got a big show lined up for you. Here's what we got going on. First of all, Nate Banner's in the studio. Hey, Nate.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
It's going very well. I mean, I'm doing well. I can't speak for everybody else.
I'm doing okay.
I lift.
Yeah. Hey, do you lift, bro?
Reminiscing about the old lifting days.
I'm totally going to make a meme of you saying, do you even lift, bro?
It said mem, incidentally, not meme.
It's mem?
Yeah, mem.
Okay, so where is that coming from that you've determined that it's called mem?
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night, 10 to 11 on the website. Ben?
Yeah. So here's what we got going on. So Nate's in studio. We got a random question. Booba keeps getting these random questions at work. People are just approaching him and asking him stuff out of the woodwork. Things that are answered by big books and libraries. But they said, Booba, how does a Christian parent discipline their child, right? How's a Christ follower discipline their child?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to say that depends on what they did, but we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can answer that in a broad category that maybe gets to what they're asking. I have some Pope-style advice. I have some Pope-style. So the theme of the Pope-style advice is, if someone mistook you for the Pope, there were, 200,000 people standing outside your balcony, you walked outside, and you had to tell them something. What kind of advice would you give to get them off your lawn?
Hold on a minute. I don't mean to interrupt here, Ben, but generally when we give Pope-style advice, me and Booba only get 10,000 people.
Yeah.
But when you step up to the podium, all of a sudden 200K are there.
Ben from the Path brings on 200K.
You didn't wear the right hat. There's a hat to wear to get to 200,000.
We don't have the cool papal hat to get you 200K.
I can't help you do your
thing. I feel like me and Booba are the opening act for the Pope.
Exactly.
I get a
and before the Pope
hat,
comes on,
I do a clap, I head out. Anyway, so I got some Pope-style advice to get you off my lawn, and I'll give you that here in a little bit. We got some advice on Dear Life from the Path. Also, there's a guy who's testing out atheism for a year.
I read that. Yeah, I read that story.
This guy's a real wingding. So
yeah.
I'll read this out to you, and we'll see if this hits you.
I have my initial sense. Opinions about this man already, but you can go ahead and read through it.
Pastor tries atheism, loses job.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Was he surprised?
This picture of him looks like he might have been surprised. They should have fired him sooner. We'll talk about him.
Should the benefits continue?
I took the water. Also, we got some secular versus Solomon. So I will give you a bit of wisdom, and you need to tell me what is a secular bit of wisdom whether it is a biblical bit of wisdom. Okay? So that's secular versus Solomon. I will read those through, and then you'll have to – basically, the point is, can you identify biblical wisdom, or do we accept some things from the world and think that God said it? So we'll walk through that on secular versus Solomon. Dan, are you ready to go? You got your stuff up and ready?
Sure.
Okay. Dan has a game.
What?
Oh, buddy.
Dan has not only prepared something, but it looks decent.
Okay, I'm excited for it.
We're having microphone problems. Okay, you want me to go right now?
Yeah, you know what? Go for it.
Okay, here's how this works. I may have stolen this from a legitimate radio station.
That sounds like most of the show. Go ahead.
I'm gonna give a brief synopsis of a cultural situation story going on, legitimate news story. I'll give you three options, and then you guys have to. Give me your, I'll say A, B, or C. You give me your, what you think.
I think we know how to
your
standard
response.
Premise game works. Go ahead, Dan.
But then I'll give you a point. If whoever wins, I'll let you know. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so Dan gives the options. We provide it. And then he's the arbiter of who wins and who doesn't.
Okay, gotcha.
All right.
That's fierce, Dan. Go ahead.
Maybe you've seen this. This awesome dad picture. It's been all over the place. Recently, a blogger received an overwhelming response when he posted a picture on Facebook and Twitter of him combing the hair of his toddler and his daughter, or his toddler daughter, excuse me, while his infant was strapped to his chest in a baby carrier. The man claimed he had no ulterior motive when he took the picture except to provide proof to his wife that he did, in fact, style his three-year-old daughter's hair. After 15 minutes of multitasking, the final result was a nice, tight ponytail for Big Sister and a happily sleeping baby in the carrier. Mission accomplished. He emailed the photo to his wife with the caption, "Boom," and they both got a laugh out of it. However, he posted this, and he got all kinds of negative response. Not so funny. Some of the more hateful responses he received was, number one, he probably rented those kids. They don't even look like him. Another guy said, "I would bet anything that you're a deadbeat." Another guy says, "Okay, buddy, cute picture. Now why don't you hand the children back to their moms so you can go back to selling drugs or your bootleg rap CDs?" A last one, "So do you do this for all your illegitimate kids?"
Holy
God. Oh,
pretty nasty.
Wow.
Okay. Psalm 127 says, "Children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb's reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them." How do you respond to this man taking care of his children? Is it A, what a big deal? What's the big deal? He's doing what dads are supposed to do. Is it B, he's a super dad and most dads could never do what he does? Or is it C, he's a deadbeat dad who's just trying to look good on Facebook?
Okay, now it's open. It's open to everybody.
I'd say A.
Trey's in for A.
I'm in for A.
Okay.
Well, you gotta tell me why though. You can't just say all, you know.
What dads are supposed to do? You try to take pictures of every moment of your kids' lives. So I don't think that you're just a deadbeat because, one, you take one picture and put it on social media. Two, do people look into the background of his social media account? Does he post pictures like that a lot? Or is this the first picture in, like, the 3 years that his daughter is alive?
You all right? All right. Booba.
I'm going to go B because I cannot imagine being able to actually do hair. Like, I would be awful at it, so...
That's why you have none?
Yeah, I would consider that to be a super dad deal. I can't imagine coming up with a clean ponytail.
What? I'm sorry, what were the options again?
What's the big deal? He's doing what dads are supposed to do.
Okay.
He's a super dad, you know? I could never do that. Or he's just a deadbeat dad trying to impress someone with a photo.
No, he's doing what dads are supposed to do.
Yeah, I'm in with that. He's doing what dads are supposed to do.
Yeah,
hey,
I mean...
You learn how to do hair, Boova.
I don't know.
I'm doing great.
Yeah. Pick it up. Use someone else's kid to start.
No,
that's creepy.
Here's the deal. When we first got my first daughter's hair was getting long enough to comb. I actually tried to practice on the dolls after she went to bed because I didn't want my wife seeing it and it was embarrassing for me. But her hair is like half cooked spaghetti. I mean, it is impossible to deal with, and I still make a mess of it now. For years I've been trying to convince him to do hats. Or straight ponytails. They don't want anything to do with it. They insist on having it flow in front of their face like a freaked out mogwai. And so I'm going to go with A, though. I mean, that's a dad's job. Strap him up and comb that hair. That's A. Yeah.
All right. Nate.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. You know, no matter what, who cares if he's trying to impress people? He's there. He's present. He's doing his job as a father. So I'm going to go ahead and go with that.
Did he take... Was it like a selfie of him doing this?
It was a selfie.
So he's combing with one hair, kid strapped,
well,
and then...
he set the timer.
Oh, that's macho.
After it was all done.
I'm moving my hair to B. That's uptown.
Again, yeah. He was going to send it to his wife saying, "See, I can do this." She was late for work.
That's what I'm saying. I would produce proof of doing something dadly that seemed like it was awesome.
She didn't think he could do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to give the point to Trey. I just liked your answer. He does have a website, and he does post these kind of pictures all the time. So it really wasn't that out of the ordinary.
This is outrageous. Go ahead.
Trey wins. Okay, here's the second one. The Son of God movie's coming up. Maybe you've seen the previews in the movie. Film producer Mark Burnett says his soon-to-be-released movie, Son of God, will have a wide impact for Christian evangelism as modern technology brings the film about the life of Jesus to remote areas of the world. He says, "We believe in the decades to come, people in remote places will find Jesus through watching this movie on their iPhones." Burnett is a highly successful Hollywood producer who last year turned from reality programming such as Survivor, The Apprentice, Shark Tank, and The Voice to make the box office blockbuster The Bible, a 10-part miniseries that appeared on cable last February. Burnett said Son of God could rival and the reach of Jesus, the 1979 project of Campus Crusade for Christ, which the New York Times once described as the most watched movie of all time. Son of God will look at Jesus' entire life, dealing with the birth, mission, miracles, trial, crucifixion, resurrection, also deals with the ascension, and even deals with Revelation. All right. With the new movie about Jesus coming out very soon, what are your thoughts? A, I can't wait. I'll watch every Christian-based movie that hits the theaters. B, I'll wait and see. Christian movies tend to be lower quality and inaccurate, so it's hard to get excited. Or C, this is a bad idea. It makes Christians lazy to think a movie can tell the gospel for them.
Oh, that's good.
Who's up? Hey, Nate.
Make Nate go first.
Wow. I don't watch every Christian-based movie that comes out. But, you know, I went to a movie the other night, and there was, out of the four or five previews, there was two Christian-based, you know, Son of God was one of them. So that was pretty cool to see. I'm going to go D, this Jesus has is the advertising for ChapStick. You guys ever seen the movie? You ever seen this Jesus? Like, in the, what was the other? It was a spinoff.
A spinoff of the Bible?
The Bible. The Bible series. Thank you. Drawing a blank, and it's the stinking Bible.
Okay. What's that book we read all the time? It's black.
What are we trying to tell people?
What's that thing I spanked the kids with?
The scene, you know, where he's being tempted in the desert, and he's dirty, and he's sweaty, and scrapes all over him, but yet he has perfect chapstick lips. Uh-huh. So I'm wondering if they get any advertising dollars from...
That's how the Holy Spirit rules.
All right, D was not an option, Mike.
Man, I'm kind of a mix between A and C. Like, here's the deal. Like, I could say the same thing for The Passion of the Christ, but I really enjoyed The Passion of the Christ. Like, there's
you enjoyed it.
Well, I mean,
it was well done.
You're sick.
Well, here's the deal. Is like I go to it for perspective.
I know what you're saying.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I get perspective out of it. Now whether it's right or not, I just do. And so, like, I found that there was qualities to it. There's things I didn't agree with. There was thematic, you know, additives to it that weren't totally accurate. But they were there to show other parts of the Bible that weren't necessarily able to be done in that time, right? And so, like, I appreciate it for that. On the other hand, like, The Passion of the Christ is not a good evangelistic tool, right? You're seeing a lot of history, but you're missing a lot of God's heart in there. Some of the stuff that I liked most about The Passion of the Christ was like when he was making the table and joking around with his mom. Like, I don't know, but there was
yeah, I remember that in Luke.
Like it was just a heart of God you don't get to see. Like when he was talking to his disciples, it was another heart of God that the whole movie couldn't encompass. And so you can't just point you know to God's story and shove him at The Passion of the Christ and call it done. I feel like you're not going to be able to do the same thing with this movie either. So I'm gonna go. I probably can't. But I'd like to go between A and C. I feel like that's the case.
You're an ace.
Troy, this is going to be really easy to beat. Go ahead.
We haven't really set it up for you very well.
I'll go with that.
I don't actually watch really any Christian movies, and I never saw the Bible series. I think that certain cases they could have merit, but I'm kind of torn, unfortunately, between... some of the concepts of A and some of the concepts of the B. I think that it could be a good thing, but at the same time, I think it could be pretty awful also. So unfortunately,
I'm going to win this, Dan. You just wait.
Yeah, I think someone else is going to win this because I'm not swinging in a great answer here. I'm an ab.
All right.
What was C again?
See, it's a bad idea. It makes Christians lazy to think they can a movie can tell the gospel for them.
Oh. Yeah, I'd probably go with C. I feel like with Christian movies, I think people tried to evangelize with them. I got suggested to watch Fireproof. I got suggested to watch, what's the one about the cops?
Courageous.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, they're really good, hearty movies. And it's just like, oh, wow, you feel good after it.
I've never heard someone say they were good and hearty. But that's,
yeah, but it's just like when I got done watching it, did I go sit down and spend time in prayer? Did I go sit and read my Bible right away? No, it was my own self-decision to do that. So I feel like with people, when movies come out like this, they suggest them instead of really setting up time to disciple and to build fellowship, because it's a lazy way to say, hey, here's how you can learn about God. Instead of saying, hey, meet me for coffee. Let's talk about your personal problems. Let's talk about your life. Let's work as a team. Let's be one body. Let's live in Christ together. So I feel like with Christian movies, sometimes it really pushes out the whole discipling people, and just it's a suggestion instead of following through with here's the Son of God, here's Jesus, here's grace, and here's the Bible.
Gotcha.
Like, so that's my.
Could it though? Could it start conversations about Christ? You know, like people who are immersed in the Bible and Christianity, like, you know, we know that they're not entirely accurate, and it, the acting is a little bit lame sometimes, and you know,
yeah, can't anybody cast a good Judas? You know what I'm saying?
Steven Spielberg was busy that weekend.
Kirk Cameron is hilarious when he's screaming at his wife, but like, you know, some people who aren't aware of all that stuff, they watch the shows like the Bible or these movies, and they say, was it really like that, or why did God do that? Or I feel like it, although cheesy at times, I feel like they can open up some conversation to do exactly what you're talking about, yeah, as disciple people.
This one does have some potential. I mean,
Well, I suppose what it boils down to, right, is like, just because people use it for that doesn't mean it shouldn't be made and there's not merit to it. It's just you need to watch yourself as that you're not dumping people on a faceless movie that has no heart for them.
I think at the end, with the movies, it's really ideals. Like with The Passion, there was a lot of ideas. There was a lot of stuff that was mixed, and there was a lot of stuff that was left out.
Right,
so
right.
It's really your own interpretation of reading the Bible and getting what it takes and what you take from it. So that's where sometimes I feel like when we just watch these movies, we get other faith or Christian suggestions on what the Bible really does in our lives instead of reading it ourselves and really taking that impact.
Yeah. And yeah. I think I fall solidly in the B category. I think you take it for what it is. It doesn't replace evangelism. Nothing works in a silo. That's the deal with community, right? There's people all around you, and there's different ways with interacting with the church as a whole, with media, with the Bible, with all the elements that go into it. All those things are different elements that come together as a broad way that is living for Christ. And if you treat it as if it's the solution to one specific thing or the other, it's simply going to fail you. It's not what it's designed to do. And a lot of those movies are not designed to evangelize people. A lot of those movies are just designed – they're parables, right? They're just ways to tell a story in a way that has like a big impact on you that relates to your life. It's frankly what Jesus was doing. And so if you take it for what it is, I think there's nothing it's just like the guy that was preaching for his own gain, right? Whatever it is, God's being preached. As long as it's faithful to the gospel in general, I there certainly isn't a harm in it. And frankly, I feel like it starts conversations that are good. We as ultimately the responsibility is not deferred because of those things; it's enhanced because of those things, and it gives us better opportunity to be able to follow through with what we're able to do as Christ's bride. So I'm a solid B. All right, point goes to Ben Foost.
Thank you.
I'm kind of in the same place, mostly because I agree.
Well, that makes sense, Dan. Thanks.
I concur.
I often feel like I have to apologize toward the end of one of these movies for the cheese factor. It's like, yeah, okay, I know they were the worst team of football. Now they weren't in state championships, and the guy got back his wife. And, you know, I mean, it's like, oh, you believe, okay, everything's going to go great now. It's like, okay, it's really not. Anyway, yeah, so that's that. All right, one last one. Remember good old story of Kanye West at the MTV Awards and Taylor Swift, and she won? Here we go. A few years ago at the MTV Video Music Awards, Taylor Swift won an award, and as she was making her speech, Kanye West grabbed the microphone from her, claimed Beyonce had the best video of all time. Mm-hmm. Recently, just a few weeks ago, an interviewer asked Kanye how he dealt mentally, physically, and spiritually with the backlash from that moment. I feel bad for him. They're really feeling bad for poor Kanye. Kanye replied, "It's funny you would say mentally, physically, and spiritually, because my answer before you even said that was going to be God, sex, and alcohol." Kanye said, "I don't have an addictive personality, so that means I can lean on what might be someone else's vice just enough to make it through the next day. You know, just enough religion, a half a cup of alcohol with some ice in it, and then I'd make it to the next week." All right, what's your response to Kanye West's method of getting through hard times in life? Is it A, harmless, a little God, sex, and alcohol is a great way to approach pain if done within the boundaries of God's word? B, completely wrong, his method would only cause more pain, it's better to run to God alone? Or C, that was a ridiculous question from the reporter, Taylor Swift was the one who was wrong, not Kanye West.
I'd like to answer for the table.
Yeah. Community answer, please.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start off. I'm going to give what perhaps is potentially shocking, but there are elements of A that I actually would agree with to a certain extent.
Because if you're talking about things within the boundaries of God's word, he's a man that created sex. He's a man that drank wine and even advocated for the purchase of strong drink, Old Testament style. I'm not sure it fits exactly in this case, but it's not outside of the realm of possibility that it is something that God, things that God has created to enjoy. So put me in a faux A category, automatic loss. Go.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with B. No argument.
Well,
just that's it, huh? Just me. Don't do it.
I'm going to take a risk just like Ben did, and I'm going to say a little bit of A as well. I think that...
A little bit of God, half a God?
That's why I say a little bit of A, because we need all of God when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Your caveat on A was within the boundary of God's word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if sex is within the boundary of God's word, so if it's marital sex, which is perfectly fine...
Is Kanye married?
Yeah. Yes.
To Beyonce. No, that's not right.
No, that's Jay-Z.
Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian, yes. So
I'm hip.
Within a marital relationship is absolutely fine. So, sure, run to that. Awesome. God made it awesome for a reason. It's supposed to be fun for you and your spouse.
But also, he wasn't married when he did this announcement.
But this is now.
This was just last month, this interview.
So since this is now, yes, that's fine. A little bit of alcohol.
I don't know how he dealt with that.
it was a weird way for him to answer it, but a little bit of alcohol is fine as well, as long as you're within your bounds and it doesn't become anything that hinders your relationship with God and makes you look like a fool. As long as you're not getting not completely hammered drunk in any way, it's fine to have a little bit of alcohol. That's no issue whatsoever. So, two parts A, but the final part being you need a lot of God, not just a little bit of God. You need all of him. So, yes, A is going to be the one that I'm rooting for.
Okay, Mike.
A.
Mike's in for A directly. I felt bad about the last VMAs, and I approached my wife about it. It's a rough night, woman. Nate.
I'm going to go with B. I think nothing else should take the place of God in trying to find peace with yourself and get over that stuff. I was going to interrupt you during that and say that your last question was the best of all time. I'm going to let you finish. Kanye West reference.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I was slow.
I think we were all slow on that one.
That was pretty nice.
Everyone's just like, huh?
This is the one joke I've had all night.
That was
okay, I'm gonna give the point.
All right, Dan.
I'm giving the point to the trio of Mike, Troy, and Ben because I did intentionally put that twist in there in the boundaries of God's word because I'd be all over all of that. However, it's an easy. You can easily cross a line, and it could go B pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing:
it's in the boundaries. That's the whole point,
It's an order, and so like if the God's not first, now you got big problems, right? Like biblically, what we talked about: there's no problem with drink in under God's law. There's no problem with sex under God's law. He gave it to you as a gift, right? But God has to be top of the ladder. It's just like the funnel. It's just like anything else. If you're replacing God with either of those two things, you got problems.
Yeah, you got a problem. Yeah,
and so like God's got to be first, but like I mean, don't it's you can't. It's a very charismatic view to shoo away every tool he's ever given you on how to live life saying that, like, I will do this with God alone, right? Like, that's me saying, like, I'm going to do, I don't know, I'm trying to achieve this goal in my life. And then, like, someone offers you money to help out, and you're like, no, the Lord will help me. And then you turn away everything that God has sent your way because you're looking for something different when he's provided ways for it to get done. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Dan, is that it?
That's it.
All right, here we roll.
I won.
Good answer.
And now, for America's fastest growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
And you've just happened upon America's unproven fastest growing internet game show, Secular versus Solomon. Here's the setup of the game. I will give you a bit of wisdom, a proverb, and you need to tell me whether that's a biblical bit of wisdom or whether that is a secular bit of wisdom. If it is a secular bit of wisdom, I also need a country of origin. Okay, what country originated that bit of wisdom if it didn't come from the Bible? Everybody good on the rules?
Yep.
Okay, we've got to make quick work of this game, fellas.
I'm ready.
All right. Chat, you guys can play along. Here we go. Number one. Trey's out because he's too close to the screen. Here we go. Number one. Stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Secular or Solomon. Stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Dan Hudson.
That is secular. It's Kuwait. They really love the water.
Kuwaitis have sweet stolen water. Nate Baird.
I'm going to go secular on that also, and I'm going to say China.
Chinese secular, Mike.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the tail end of Solomon's rough years. I'm going to go with Solomon, Ecclesiastes style.
Ecclesiastes tail Solomon. End
of Solomon's rough years. I'm going to go secular Samoa.
The Samoans. And you're right. All right, here we go. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Solomon, Proverbs 9:17.
Yes.
And shame shall fill the room.
Fail, fellas.
No devotions tonight, babe. I had a rough night at the VMAs.
That's what I thought. Here we go. One should go invited to a friend in good fortune and uninvited in misfortune. One should go invited to a friend in good fortune and uninvited in misfortune. Secular or Solomon? Nate.
Secular. And because I was doing some research on this game earlier, I'm just going to go with China again.
They make a lot of good stuff in China. Hey, I love this man, Mike.
That bird's sharper than I thought. You know what I'm saying? Also, that's got a lot of the tinglings of tail end Solomon. I'm going with Solomon again.
Solomon. John Buva.
I'm going to hop on the bandwagon on that one. Go Solomon.
A cheesy move. Dan Hudson.
Yep, proud of it.
That is so India. I'm going secular.
One should go invited to a friend in good fortune and uninvited in misfortune. Secular Sweden.
Ooh. Hey, man.
Sweden.
Ooh. Hey, it's not my fault you're following the blind man.
That's true.
Change your ways.
Here we go. The beginning of wisdom is to call things by their right names. The beginning of wisdom is to call things by their right names. Secular or Solomon. Mike.
Secular. Russia.
John Buva.
Solomon.
Solomon. Very good. Dan Hudson.
That's only if that right name is God, the fear of God. But so I'm going to say secular, and man, that's Canadian. That screams Canadian.
It screams Canada. That's borderline offensive. Nate Baird.
Secular. China.
Secular China. The beginning of wisdom is to call things by their right names. The right name is a very wise Nate Baird. China. Secular.
What?
I knew secular. I hated everyone.
That's awesome.
That's a great band from China.
Here we go. Secular Solomon. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Secular or Solomon. John Buva.
Solomon.
Dan Hudson.
Oh, man. I'm gonna go secular, but I'm going to say it's from Jerusalem, from Israel.
I'll accept. Nate Baird.
That's like both answers. Isn't it?
I'm going yeah. Solomon.
That's cheap Solomon. Mike.
I'm running for office.
Yeah, that sounds like the tail end of Solomon's life. I'd say Solomon.
That's his early years.
Yeah. End of Solomon's dark years.
One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. That is Solomon, Proverbs 11:24.
That's the tail end. He's barely kicking.
11?
How many books are in Proverbs?
31.
I'm sorry, Jerusalem. How many chapters are in the book of Jerusalem?
I believe most.
Here we go. Better to be lowly and have a servant than to play the great man and lack bread. Better to be lowly and have a servant than to play the great man and lack bread. Dan Hudson.
Solomon.
Solomon. Nate Baird.
Secular China.
Secular China. Mike Foost.
Secular Beirut.
The Beirutians. John Buva, pull yourself together. We're trying to put on a game here.
Secular Ireland.
Secular Ireland, better to be lowly and have a servant than to play the great man and lack bread. Very sad, fellas. Proverbs 12:9.
Wow.
Proverbs 12:9.
Sort of sad, gentlemen.
Go Jerusalem.
Team Dan.
Secular Bethlehem. Hey,
the best way to prepare for secular for Solomon is to read Solomon. I'm looking at you two, fellas. You've been playing this game for a year and a half.
That's true.
What a poor showing.
I thought maybe just by default I would learn more. Because here's the deal. Solomon is a gateway drug to Lamentations. And I don't want to go there.
There we go. Do not use a hatchet to remove a fly from your friend's forehead. Do not use a hatchet to remove a fly from your friend's forehead. Secular or Solomon. Nate.
Oh, man. I'm going to go secular Russia.
Secular Russia, Mike Foost.
I was going to say secular Russia. I'm changing it to secular Belize.
You could have spited him with China, but Belize it is. John Buva.
I'm going to go secular Mongolia.
Mongolia, Dan Hudson.
Yeah, it's secular, definitely. And, man, that's Argentina. A lot of crooks there, isn't it?
hatchet branders.
Hatchet face Argentinians.
It's like one of those warnings on the labels of stuff, like strollers. Like, take your baby out of the stroller before you fold it out. Like, I feel like they had to say this because somebody actually tried.
That's right. You get one guy in Argentina swinging the hatchet.
All because of old Frank.
Hey, man, you got a fly in your head. I got a hatchet.
I got it.
Do not use a hatchet to remove a fly from your friend's forehead. Make sure you bring extra fly paper and a helmet to China. That is
what?
A-
what?
Oh. Kidding me.
He abandoned the Sherwin. I'm tired of these mind games, Bear. I'm all messed up. Made the mistake of not betting on black. Mike, you're up next. In baiting a mousetrap with cheese, always leave room for the mouse.
Yeah, that's not in the Bible. I'm going with secular and Chile.
Chile, in baiting a mousetrap with cheese, always leave room for the mouse.
I'm going to go secular French.
French, Dan Hudson.
Boy, it's secular. I'm trying to think of...
What is this?
Boy, it's secular.
They're like a smooth jazz station. Yeah.
Boy, it's a secular answer.
Ooh, secular.
That's got to be Wisconsin. They're not cheese. Their own... I'm going to go...
There's too much cheese in there.
Well, boy, I'm kind of lost.
Just pick a country, Dan.
Any country.
New Zealand.
That's not funny. Nate...
I was actually going to say Wisconsin. secular, I'm going to go with Ireland.
In baiting a mousetrap with cheese, always leave room for the mouse. It's a problem in Greece.
Yeah, I knew it.
They're overgenerous in the trap.
I didn't want to make y'all
They're
feel
gluttonous.
Bad.
Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but abundant crops come by the strength of the ox. Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but abundant crops come by the strength of the ox. Secular or Solomon, John Buva.
I'm going to go Proverbs.
Okay, oh,
excuse me, Solomon.
Solomon, Dan.
Boy, I'm going to go secular because he just feels secular. And Mexico.
Awesome. Nate Baird.
I'm going with Solomon.
Solomon, Mike Boost.
Yeah, it's not Solomon. I'm going with secular and Botswana.
Where there are no oxen, the manger is clean, but abundant crops come by the strength of the ox. Solomon, Proverbs 14:4.
Oh. That's not Solomon.
What was that?
No, you're cheating.
I have a swimming pool full of shame, and I swim in it.
I needed more.
It is not the horse that draws the cart, but the oats. It is not the horse that draws the cart, but the oats. Put the think on that when you're on the John Dan Hudson.
What? Dan likes to do all his thinking in public.
Well, that's what you want. I'm going to call that secular, too, just and... we're going to go with Quebec.
There's a province in Canada.
Yeah. 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 Wait a minute. That's not right. It's not New Canada. What was I thinking?
What's with you against the Canadians, man?
I did fail geography. I'm going to go with Egypt.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely right next to it.
It's not pretty close.
It's not the horse that draws the cart, but the oats. Nate Baird.
I'm going to go secular Italy.
Italy, Mike Foost.
Secular China.
China. John Bova.
Secular Greece.
It's not the horse that draws the cart, but the oats. Secular Russia. Secular Russia.
Right next to Greece.
I had it by a fingernail.
You don't like the sugar cube.
That's only like
I don't do Russian anymore.
Don't.
That's only like an inch and a
that's
half.
That's redundant. Don't put me away
on a map.
Exactly.
So. That's three fingers away.
It's like that far away.
Or sometimes a pepperoni, depending on what you're eating.
Here we go. Overall, disappointing night, boys. Finally, a king's wrath is a messenger of death, and a wise man will appease it. A king's wrath is a messenger of death, and a wise man will appease it. Secular or Solomon? Nate Baird.
I feel like that may be Solomon.
Solomon. Mike Foost.
Solomon.
John Buva.
Solomon.
Bandwagon. Dan Hudson.
Solomon.
Anybody with a chapter guess on Solomon?
23. Solomon 23.
Proverbs 23. Or
Second Solomon.
Proverbs 7.
The non-apocryphal Proverbs 16:14.
Oh, yeah,
that's
say.
A Solomon.
All right.
You.
Exactly.
I say that.
Whether you've done it intentionally or otherwise, have just landed in America's fastest growing, non-proven internet game show.
America's fastest growing game show. Secular or Solomon?
Thank you guys so much for playing along. Hey, if you want to catch other iterations of the secular versus Solomon game, go to livefromthepath.org. It's up 23/7. It's kind of, we don't pay a lot for it.
Yeah.
23/7, but probably during the time when you're not looking. You can go to the lifeandpath.org. You can catch previous games, iterations. Also, there's some quizzes out there, fun quizzes like
things said on Christian radio to raise money.
Yeah,
that's always a classic.
That was a good one.
$1,000 to be an apostle.
Yep. You can always check that out. Go to lifeforthepath.org. This is the place you can sign up for the podcast and catch previous versions of the show, performances from the artists that have been on it, all that kind of stuff. Hey, before we get moving any further, I want to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. They help to keep Live from the Path on the air. That either makes you happy or makes you angry. Either way, give them a shout out. Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer team. Go to eisenlauerteam.com. Now may or may not be the time to buy or sell a house. Bob knows that kind of thing. So give him a call. You know, me and my wife were just looking at I drive around, and I saw a house for sale, and I pulled in, and sure enough, it's Bob. Bob's selling this. He's got a house for sale over in the Berwick area. It looks all right.
Did you call him up?
No, it's a little out of my range. You know how it is.
Yeah, that happens to me too.
I had to expend the gas to get there, and I thought, I don't have the money for this.
Yeah, I used to stop by the Little Debbie aisle quite a bit until they jacked him up to $1.89 per an apple pie.
That's not right.
I'm out. You know what I'm saying? You don't like Mike Foost, you get him above $1.50. I can't participate anymore.
Yeah. So anyway, call Bob Eisenlauer. Here's the deal. If you're looking to buy or sell a house, we've done real estate work with Bob. He's been on the show a couple times. He's just an awesome guy to work with. And give him a call or go to the EisenlauerTeam.com. And either way, just say, hey, Bob, thanks for advertising with Life and Path, keeping us on the air. Or I really wish you wouldn't do that, but now that I have you on the phone, I'd like to buy a house.
Right.
That's the way. They could play out that way. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital here in Johnston. So February is Dogs Dental Cleanliness Month. And here's the deal. There's only so many days in February, so I'm starting in January. You know you don't be brushing the dog's teeth like you're supposed to.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done
that. And you're like, well, but you know, dogs...
How many times are you supposed to?
I don't know, like once a month, I think. That's
once
what I'm going
month?
For. Yeah.
No. He's supposed to do it once a day.
What?
Here's the falsehood you've heard on the internet. If you give him a bone, he'll clean his teeth. Does that make any sense to you? When's the last time you ate something and it cleaned your teeth? You think the dogs have some kind of magic teeth that's cleaned by a bone?
Did you brush your teeth this morning?
Stupid.
No, I had a steak. We're good.
Take the dog in and get the teeth cleaned.
Well, now something has to work, though, because there's dogs. There were wild dogs. And they seem to, they don't walk around
Yeah, it's because
toothless.
they're not taking in a bunch of processed dog food, right? They were eating wild, natural stuff. Look at most of the undeveloped countries. Their people's teeth are just fine. They're not taking a bunch of processed sugar and processed carbohydrates, and their teeth are just fine.
That's true. Those guys are growing teeth.
Exactly.
I think we saw different videos growing up. A lot of them don't have teeth.
Yeah, they just wanted to, you don't watch the right videos, Dan.
They picked out those.
Just because James Dobson put it out doesn't mean it's right.
Actually, they probably hopped up on the stuff that we sent over there.
That's right. Yeah, USAID, what it equals tooth decay.
My Christmas box.
Thanks for the Oreos. These are great. I haven't eaten in 4 days. Now I'm on a sugar rush.
So,
Mountain Dew.
Anyway, you know you're not be taking care of the dog's teeth like you're supposed to. Westfield Veterinary Hospital, it's just time to get on board with that stuff. Take care of your dog's teeth. You know their breath ain't funky just because they're dogs. It's because you're not taking care of their teeth.
That's right.
All right, so give a hold of those guys. They can hook you up with a – first, they'll do it for you. They can get you the right stuff so you can do it at home. And they'll be straight with you. Look, here's the stuff that your dog needs. Here's the stuff that we recommend. It's like kind of like an oil change.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to think of it?
Here's the deal. And if they try to sell you them teeth cleaning biscuits, they're probably right. I was just kind of talking out my shoe. I could be wrong about that. It don't make no sense to me, I'll tell you that. I mean, they're professionals.
But that's Westfield Veterinary Hospital here in Johnston. They've been good sponsors of the show, and they're a great place to take your pets to. And I've had my dogs have been in there, and they're just good folks. So make sure you get a hold of them. Take your dog, your pet, your dog, cat there. At the very least, send them an email, give them a phone call, say, hey, thanks for keeping Life from the Path on the air. All right, real quick, I want to talk about this pastor. So this is on the CNN. Says, pastor tries atheism, loses job, gains $19,000.
Yeah, that sounds like a God-sized trade. Absolutely.
All right. So in the past, at times like these, when his life foundered and frayed around the edges, Ryan Bell often prayed for help. But this year, at least, the pastor has resolved not to. For the next 12 months, Bell says he will live as if there is no God. He will not pray, go to church, read the Bible for inspiration, trust in divine providence, or hope in things unseen. He's taking the opposite of a leap of faith, a free fall into the depths of religious doubt. So question number one, is that even possible?
That's what I was thinking.
It's a radio show, Dan. You're going to have to expound.
Well, no, I was just like, how do you say, I guess I'm not married. You know, it's like, you are, though. I mean, like, how do you suddenly not have a relationship with God? How do you just suddenly say, I'm just not going to pray? I mean, if you had any, I mean, the guy was already there or he wouldn't be doing this, I'm thinking, from what little I've heard so far.
Well, it seems weird to as your job, as your occupation, to be leading people in the Word of God and obviously having you know, it helps if you have that relationship, if you're going to be leading people on that.
Yeah, wouldn't it scare you if you were a previous counseling patient of his? You know what I'm saying? Like, oh. He was counseling through the rough times of your life, and he'd believe nothing what he was saying? Like, that would it would shake me to my core.
Yeah.
And I think to a certain extent, like when he says, let's see, he's not going to pray, go to church, read the Bible, or trust in divine providence, or hope in things unseen. Like, take God out of the equation. Everybody hopes in things unseen in one way or the other, right? Maybe it's not God. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's the God of science. Maybe it's just things that are going on, karma, call it whatever, right? But most people have a foundation in some kind of hope that is unseen, whether it be God or otherwise. So, like, this thought that because you're dropping God or not going to church or reading the Bible for inspiration, it doesn't mean that you're not getting inspiration. It doesn't mean that you're not trusting in some sort of hope unseen. I think that's a false premise, basically, to label it as that. You've moved those things to something else. For the reasons that people pray, like God has a tally marker. Like, that guy prayed today. Did he go to church? Well, then he doesn't believe in me. Like, that's not God's not on a tally system. I pray because I want to, right? I go to church because I'm part of a community. That's where my people go, right? So if you started living a hermit's lifestyle, if you chose not to read any inspirational wall posters, you know, if you stopped agreeing in gravity, okay, fine. I might be able to get on board with that you cut the leash. But like, I don't know. I'm just, it's kind of a false premise, I think, what is that to say, I'm going to stop believing in God, that all those things kind of
was
go
that,
away.
Was that quoted from him? Like, did he quote that, I'm not going to this, I'm
no,
not
No, that's
gonna...
the, that, I think that's the...
Okay, I was going to say, like, I mean, I know, obviously, a decent amount of folks that read the Bible. Very few of them go there for inspiration. You know what I'm saying? I go there for truth that sometimes equals inspiration. Most of the time, not. Most of the time, I just change my ways. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I got things I need to work on, or me and the Holy Spirit need to do some talking, and I need to move out of the way a little bit. But, like... you know, maybe it's generally lost on me, the inspirational fluffy posts, but I just don't. Well, I don't get them.
I think that what did we read? What was it 2 weeks ago? One of the top verse from the YouVersion was "I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me." Right. And so, like, I think sometimes shallowly we go to that looking for God to bless the things what we got going on, as opposed to asking what He's got going on and trying to get in on that.
Yeah.
All right, but here, let's continue. His intellectual experiment. Sweet Moses, which began January 1st, has already borne dramatic consequences. In less than a week, okay, he lost two jobs, can you say discrimination? Teaching at Christian schools near his home in Los Angeles. He's 42 and has been a pastor in seminary for most of his adult life. Tear. Now he faces the prospect of poverty and taking odd jobs to feed his two daughters, 10 and 13. What an irresponsible doofus.
Did it say where that $19,000 came from?
Yes, it's coming up. It's coming up. He says, there have been times, usually late at night and early morning, when I think, what have I done? Indeed.
Yes.
It really undermines the whole structure of your life, your career, your family.
Good question.
It's like the guy standing outside the ark going, you know, I might have been wrong about this.
It's really wet out here. It seems like that seems a lot safer.
Is this water's rising. Does it look like it's rising to you, John?
You that was in my kneecap like 2 hours ago, man. What's happening?
Maybe I'll scratch the hole.
Anybody in there?
The seeds of Bell's journey were planted last March when he was asked to resign as a pastor of Seventh-day Adventist Congregation in Hollywood. He had advocated for the church to allow gay and lesbian leaders, campaigned against California's same-sex marriage ban, and disputed deeply held church doctrines about the end times. Okay, so he's got trouble. He's in disagreement as a pastor of his church where he doesn't agree with the denomination to begin with. Seems like his firing was well-placed.
Justified, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he surprised that he got fired?
He seems to be.
Okay, because if you just take the God part out of it, you take the spiritual part out of it, like, I'm a graphic designer, a film, you know, digital guy. If I just told my boss one day that I'm just going to do everything on paper with pencils and not fulfill any of my job description, I wouldn't be surprised if he said, well,
yeah. Nate, we got to let you go. What?
Hey, boss, man, I don't believe in technology anymore, so I'm going to give up on this whole electricity thing.
I'm going to hit the power button on
that. I think paper and pencil is going to do me
I'm
good.
I'm suing. Discriminated against.
What, you firing me?
So he says his theological and political liberalism became more than leaders in the denomination could bear, no doubt, and he lost his career of 19 years. His faith was shaken. Weird.
I think weird. It was shaken to begin with.
And for a while, Bell became a religious nomad. Interesting. On the positive side, that's not even possible. Here's the real relationship with God. You're not a nomad anywhere, right? You might be a denominational nomad, but you always have community and you always have Jesus. So, like, I don't know, Christian nomadism doesn't seem like a viable option understanding the Bible correctly. On the positive side, losing his church job gave him the freedom to question the foundations of his religious belief without fear of troubling his congregation. I'm sure they weren't impacted.
Yeah.
After their pastor got fired. I could finally pursue those questions that had been bouncing around my head, he said, while earning money from teaching, speaking, and consulting jobs. Then after lunch with a friend last year, he thought, what if he tried out atheism and lived with no... That's not even agnosticism, right? He's not even saying, I'm not sure. He's like, I'm trying out the, no, it's not true.
Yeah, I'm kind of bothered by his, like, I could finally ask the questions. Why didn't you ask him questions? I do it all the time, right? That's a healthy faith, right? Like, do I really believe what I think I believe? Yes, I do. You know, like God is not afraid of your questions or your seeking answers. He's not going to be like, how dare you question me? He's like, okay, son, let's go through this. I'll straighten you out, you know? And so, like, I mean... How long has he been living on this phony raft?
Yeah, right. It's not like, oh, Mike Foost has doubts. Jesus, come down from there.
Right.
Like,
you're done. Forget
the foundation
it.
Of the faith, they're not shaking.
Had a good run.
Yeah. Almost made it, but then Mike pulled the plug at the end.
We bought those horses for the end thing and everything.
Yeah. Let that guy from outside the ark back in, too, I guess. It's like he's gone to Ecclesiastes in a handbasket.
All right. So I suppose just to kind of bring this all to a head, he ended up getting money. Atheists have rallied around him and started donating to him, and he's up 19 grand.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt here, but if that just doesn't show you the shallow case that the atheists are living on, they sink onto one, like our horse, and no one really backed him, right? It's not like the people of Jesus are like, heck yeah, that's our guy. And then they're like, we finally got the Magic Johnson of Christians over on our side, you know? Like... I'm kind of happy to lose the guy if that's the stuff that he's teaching. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have a real big problem with that. And so, like, if they have to want to throw money at the guy, they're just not doing any good, right?
Yeah. And all his jobs were religious-based. He was a consultant with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He was a pastor, and he taught at two Christian schools. Like, I don't know. Like, where is this outrage coming from? How could he not see this coming?
I feel like
he should not be leading people with this
type
of mindset.
I feel like the Lord flushed him out. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, we got to get this guy out of here. He's poisoning my people. He's filling their heads full of ridiculousness. You know, send an angel to do something. Hey, maybe you should try atheism. Hey, I think I'll try atheism.
So, like,
out.
And like, I think it was more, hey, you are an atheist leading a church.
So, like, and he learned what it's like to be an atheist real fast, said Hemant Mehta, a prominent atheist blogger and school teacher in Illinois. This guy's getting punished for publicly saying he's going to try atheism. No, he's dealing with natural consequences of being an atheist who's trying to work in religious institutions.
Yes, for basically stealing money for the last 15 years under a false premise.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. I would make no money as an atheist blogger. There's no money in that for me.
I love Jesus. What are your thoughts? Where's my 20 bucks a month?
Anyway, it was interesting, the thought, like, first of all, that a guy thought that any of this seems outrageous to me. And I think, secondly, it's not, I would agree that I think the foundation is just wrong if you think that, first of all, you can't try atheism, right? If there either is a God or there isn't. There's no, like, testing the waters. And to a certain extent, some of the things he's saying very much portrays God incorrectly, which hurts me. That hurts my heart, right? To think that a man that is this close to being to the truth of God, and he simply has mischaracterized, he sees God incorrectly. And that has cast a whole different light on Scripture and on his responsibility, and frankly, what his life can look like. And it's sad to think that you could be that close and just miss it entirely, and have it just painted so wrong that you can look at it that way.
Yeah, this guy's given up on the mechanics of a religion that he had, which is absolutely wrong, and it makes absolutely no sense for him to think that just by giving up on the prayer and on giving up on the reading of the Bible that he's going to turn to atheism, and then that's going to go well for a year. I would like to hear what this guy thinks is going to happen after the year, though. Like, I'd like to see him on January 1st of 2015, and then he say, well, atheism didn't work. I think I'm going to go back to believing in God again, and then switch back and try and get his job back at the church.
Yeah, actually, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? You can easily give up a religion. You can't easily give up a God that was the center of your life. You just can't. Like, take all the cheesy sayings you've ever heard, God-sized hole in your heart, right? Like, it's a cheese ball thing to say, but it's the truth, right? Like, I don't know. I guess I'd have to think about it.
Don't know cheese ball, C.S. Lewis.
Well, I feel like I
cheese
can't.
Ball.
I feel like I can't think of anybody that I know that truly had a relationship with God and bailed.
and left and decided to do something different. I just don't see. I've just never seen it. I've seen a lot of religion cause a lot of trouble. I've seen a lot of people try to work based, get themselves in a relationship, and it just never happened, and they bailed. But I've never seen an honest relationship with Christ go south ever. And so, like, that's exactly what happened. And I think you're right. It is really sad, right? Because I used to think if I could just point them to the Bible and get them to read their Bible, you know, they'll learn a lot about Jesus and they'll develop a relationship through that Bible. And I've this guy's number like three on my list of dudes that read the Bible and said, I don't care. It's just not for me, you know. And like it's really is really sad that you've read the truth and gone, nah, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
I think one of the things I thought about the most is, like, at first I was like, is he a lukewarm Christian? But I was like, no, you can't even put him in that category. And then my mind just kept taking me back to, like, Revelations. Neither are you hot or cold, but I want to vomit you out of my mouth. Because he's so, like, God's disappointed. Because it's you can't forget God. He's been there the entire time. You've taught about him. You've led other people. And it's just like, it really, that's where you need to be careful, because it talks about in the Bible false teachers and false prophets and everything like that. And this guy has pretty much came to claim with everything to now where he's coming out saying, I'm a false atheist. How much is he just doing this for his own self-gain?
Well, he's terrible at it. He's only gained 19 grand. I mean,
right, exactly. I would trade my faith for 19,000. Does that sound good?
My grandpa went to a Seventh-day Adventist church. They did okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that place pulls in some money. As a consultant, come on. You got to be clear of 50.
So honestly, so if you take it from the standpoint of this guy, let's say this dude has an honest faith with God and a relationship with God. How do you run away from a God? If you have an honest faith and relationship with God, you realize that God created the entire universe, is bigger than and holds the universe. I mean, I think as Isaiah talks, or Job talks about holding the Pleiades in the span of his hand, right? So he's huge, and you're trying to outrun him.
Yeah, Jonah.
And hide.
Jonah tried it.
Right, exactly. It's just like, hey, you know, I truly believe that the God that created this universe owns and holds all of it, but I'm going to run away. And he's not going to find me for a year. It's like, haha, God, I'm not going to pray to you, so you don't know where I'm at.
But to your example, though, plenty of guys that you would look back and say, you know, they believe they were just fools. I mean, Jonah is one of them.
Yeah, that's true.
Is he not?
Yeah, but
of course, you know, we don't really get the rest of the story after he's pouting under that deal.
No. But that's different. Like, he didn't deny. He just didn't want to do what God told him to do. I do that.
Yeah, he didn't want those people.
I'm not bailing up my relationship with God. I'm just scared of him because I don't want to do it.
Those Ninevites are jerks. Nineveh. I mean, it was a ruthless place.
Yes.
They were not, like, good people.
It's like, I'm going to get killed if I go to Nineveh.
Yeah,
he wasn't
severing ties with the Lord. He was just a coward, right? Yeah. And like, he made a decision and tried to bolt, but that wasn't
he pouted afterwards and lamented that God didn't just take him out rather than save the Ninevites.
He's a bit of a whiner. You know what I mean?
That's true.
God knitted him together as a whiner.
You knit him a doily for his stuff. Oh, I know that's going to be all right there, Jonah.
I'm just saying. I mean, not everybody can be bent from the path, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
Ain't that the truth?
Specifically,
I walk none tall of us shine bright.
Specifically, only one person in this room is bent from the path. So, we can't all be you.
All right. Anyway, I don't know. You know, we kind of had some laughs because I think he's a little bit outrageous with his remark. Like, people that act surprised at certain things bother me. Like, the things just happen in life and it's the overreaction that gets me. He's overreacting. Any reasonable guy could have wrote down a situation and said, hey, man, if I turn to be an atheist, I'll probably lose all my Jesus jobs.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Phrase that in a Jeopardy question. You'd get it right from your couch.
So his overreaction is funny to me. His overall reaction is very, it makes me sad. And it could be that this was the place where he'll be rejuvenated.
I hope so,
and I hope that's the case. And it's sad. It's sad to think that he was leading people and not leading honestly. Like, there's dishonesty. I think everybody in a leadership position is lying to pose as if their spiritual life is everything that it should be or everything that it could be. That's not leading honestly. And frankly, I don't think people follow that. And so that he was leading dishonestly. The least he could have been was honest. Stop doing that. You can love Jesus and not lead. Get out of there and, like, work on that and get in a safer position. But, like, it's just that's the big sad part here. And I hope that comes out for him. I hope his congregation heals from that. And but his reaction to it is funny and outrageous.
As we've been talking about, I've been thinking about my faith and how faithful God has been to me and my wife. You know, as we've been married and even before we were married, and I just think I don't follow Christ because of what the denomination I belong to believes or what my church believes, the do's and don'ts or the statements of faith. I follow Christ because of his faithfulness in my life and the things that he's brought me through. So it makes me think that this has been going on way, way before. We touched on that a little bit, but way before he made that decision, you know, to bail. But after all I've been through with God, I just don't think I could do it.
Yeah. That's what
you know
saying.
What I mean?
Yeah. I can't imagine myself being able to make the conscious decision of, you know, at one point in time, I believed in this God that completely encompasses my heart and completely encompasses my life, and I'm just going to give up on him.
Yeah. I mean, I've been at spots where I'm like, Lord, help me with my unbelief. I've been there.
Right.
Like, I've been there, like, whatever the situation is, I'm struggling with seeing you clearly here, and I'm asking for your help to help me to see that clearly. Like, definitely that. But I don't think I've never gone to been to a point where I'm like, I'm going to try to run from this deal. Like, it just feels foolish.
Right.
I think what this guy has done is he's a victim of Hebrews. Is it 4? We're talking about drifting. He drifted for so long, and finally he looked up, and he was so far away from his starting point and from his relationship with God that he finally decided, let's do this atheism thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't foreign to him. In the beginning, no doubt, it started strong, and he just drifted.
Yeah, you know, I guess
maybe it's 2.
I guess that does support the thought that as he's even giving an example of that it could be a choice. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's true or it isn't, right? Mm. If Jesus didn't live, if the Bible wasn't true, I'm a fool and I'll bail because I don't want to be a fool if it's not true. But like, either it's true or it's not. It's not like, well, this could be true and this could also be true, even though they don't fit together at all. Like, that's just not the case. Truth is what it is. And he's kind of by the I'll try atheism, giving an option as if both could be true. And I just don't get that. That just doesn't make any sense. He's given the option as if there are things that are not consistent, could exist in a world together, and they just don't. And so, yeah, that's, I don't know, man. That's rough.
Yeah, it is rough.
Okay. All right. Here's the deal. We got a lot more stuff to get to. We're going to talk about raising or discipline, following Christ and disciplining your kids. We got that coming up. And we got some advice on Deerfoot Life and the Path. I didn't get to my Pope style advice. That might have to wait. I might have to hit that next week.
Okay.
Do we have something else?
No, not today. I think Akers is coming in next week, though.
Chris Akers is in next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, so thanks for listening to Live from the Path. Big thank you to our sponsors, Westfield Veterinary Hospital and the Eisenhower team. Check them out. Hit the website. Sign up for the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you're on the podcast, we got another little bit of show to go. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week. All right, man. We're back.
I can't get as excited because I didn't hear the bumper music. Yeah. That usually helps me rock.
I'm sorry. Okay, what do we got? Let's talk about this parenting business.
Okay.
All right, so hit me with the question, Buva.
So today at work, I was approached by a coworker of mine, once again, in a random kind of out-of-the-woodwork question that I actually really enjoy getting.
Hey, wait, quick time out. Where does that come from, the out-of-the-woodwork? What is that a reference to?
Termites.
Termites.
Really?
China.
Chinese, secular China.
Chinese termites. They can't be dealt with.
Dude,
they come out of the woodwork like crazy.
Aren't termites nefarious and work behind the scenes and don't just show up like out?
Yeah, until they've consumed everything.
Then they come out of the woodwork.
And then you realize everything that's happened.
Shoot, man.
Yeah. There's little to no truth to this, Ben.
Right.
Mind blown. Go ahead.
Cool.
Keep rocking, Bubba.
So out of the woodwork, like termites do, from China, I was approached today with a question of how does a Christ follower discipline their child? And this was premised more along the lines of someone talking about physical discipline, and is that okay in a godly mind? And what parameters is that okay? And I was a little taken aback by the question because I didn't really have a specific answer at first, and I had to ask this person for some time, just a minute or two to really think and collect my thoughts so I didn't misrepresent the heart of God on that. But I wanted to know what you guys' thoughts, as godly men that we call ourselves, what are your thoughts on how you should discipline as a child as a Christ follower?
You want to take first swing, Dan?
Okay, I'm going to say it's a simple and complex at the same time. If there is outright rebellion, then there has to be consequences, and they should know ahead of time what those consequences there should be, whether it be a timeout setting, whether it be there is a time to use physical discipline. And Proverbs and Scripture is very clear about it, but not in excess. You know, the point is to make a point. The point isn't to beat them. And so the point is to teach them a lesson that will keep them from further harm, you know, in the future. I had my youngest daughter, Shanna, used to love to run out of our door at our house and run toward a street, which was a very busy street where we lived. And you know, we had to physically stop her. One time she was running towards a semi, okay? It would have run her over, and he wouldn't have even known he had done it, you know? Now, we didn't beat her or anything, but it was like we had to maybe create some pain that would be less than the pain that's going to come later. Anyway, so with us, it was a matter of rebellion. If you're in rebellion, then, you know, you have your shot. And your shot, what does that mean? There's some discipline that will come. But like I said, it was pre, they knew. We never do it out of emotion, never do it out of anger. If you're angry, you don't discipline. Screaming doesn't do any good. You know, I'm kind of all over the place, but that's our basic philosophy.
Yeah, it is tailored different for your child. Your child grows up in your home. There's
different children in the same home will be different.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And there's the ceiling applies to everybody the same, right? Yeah. Like the Bible sets out the ceiling. You're disciplining out of love because you love them. You discipline like the Father disciplines us, right? Like he disciplines to teach. If he didn't love you, he wouldn't discipline. Your family works the exact same way. I have two girls. One is 6 and one is 3. One of them needs does need a spanking on occasion. She's just bullheaded, and it's to her she's not as safe. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. She puts herself in situations where she's not safe.
You better break her will, but not her spirit.
That's right. I love her, and I don't want to see her get hurt. And there's sometimes when but this drives me nuts when people count to 3. It drives me absolutely nuts because my kids will be running after a ball that's going into the highway. You don't have 3 seconds. You have turn around now, and you need to do it right now.
Right.
And so maybe there's times like in non-important situations when like if my kids say, hey, dad, I'm going to get a lemonade. And I say, no, I think we're gonna wait on that. And they start to get the lemonade anyway. I say, I said no lemonade. Now we're done. Now we're going somewhere else. Some people see that a little harsh, right? But like, there's going to come the time, and there has come the time, when they're going to hurt themselves. And when I needed it to stop right now, it had to stop right now, right? And it's not harsh. It's not abusive. It's not yelling. I think, like I said, they're 6 and 3. They've each gotten 2 spankings their whole life, right?
Yeah.
They're selective. I've given them, you know, like especially before the physical punishment. I said, if you do this one more time, just realize that you're going to have a spanking, and it's going to be because you did that. Do you understand?
It should be rare but memorable.
Yep. And they say yes, and I say okay, and like I'm holding back way harder than they are. They're willing to accept the spanking to do it, right? And I'm like, I don't want to spank you. Please don't do this, please. But then I said, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it, right? Uh-huh. But like, I don't have to do it very often. And if you, I find very much if you talk to your kids in an open and honest manner, yep. you have to keep respect in your house, and not like disciplinary respect, but it's the same relationship that we have with God, right? We're like, we love him because he loved us, right? And your kids, that's how your kids will work. Yeah. If you show your kids love, they will want to reciprocate and keep that love and make you proud and show you that they're part of the family and they will listen because they know that they're loved already. And so like there'll be a time when you rebel, just like when we rebel against God and God has to rein us back in. It's the same as you for a father or a mother, but like it's very important that especially in their younger years, and that you're going until they're 18 to, before you let them go, 16, 17, whatever, you start to let them go. But like, I hold those reins pretty tight. First 5 years, I just hold them tight, not in a mean and aggressive way.
You're building the foundation.
Yeah, but like, there's going to be time when they can reason on their own, and they can see a highway, and they can see a stranger, and they can know the difference. But like, don't give them too much leash before they get it. Don't try to be that super fun parent that lets them, you know, stay up till midnight and eat all the popcorn they want. They're going to do that anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I was talking to a parent a couple months ago, and I said, my philosophy is I draw a really thin black line because they're going to gray anyway. You know what I'm saying? And if I draw gray to begin with, now I got gray 20 yards out of the gray. I want a thin black line, and then when we deviate or we decide to deviate as a family, we all go out for popcorn or we all stay up till midnight. That's different, but like thin black line, hold it tight. It's going to gray as they get older, and you can allow the gray, but like love them enough to teach them the ways of the Lord. And actually,
the final thing I was going to say on that is Dan made a really good point that stuck with me on Sunday when he said when your kids are in a situation, especially when they're older, when they've done something, you don't want them to think, man, I hope mom and dad don't find out. I wonder how that's going to go down, right? You want their first thought to be, I have issues with God. I have issues with my father that we need to straighten out. Mom and dad are important, but secondary, right? And like if you train your kids and you raise them up correctly, and they will mostly pick up on this by example. But if you do this correctly, their first thought will be, I've separated myself from God. I need to get that straightened up, and then I need to take I'll you know weigh this punishment of whatever it is later.
Yeah. So a lot of that boils down to communication and that loving relationship. So how do they know? What happens too often is, they don't know what they're going to do is wrong. So then you get angry, and that's probably what the person who talked to you, Troy, was concerned about is, I have this unknown rule. You can't drink the chocolate milk or something, but I never told the kids that, and I see them drinking chocolate milk, so all of a sudden they get angry and start throwing stuff at them whenever and yelling at them. That's totally inappropriate. You know? If you've had the relationship and you've had the conversation, they're going into it with their eyes wide open. They know what the consequences are. It used to drive my kids crazy. I only spanked them probably twice, either one of them ever. But it's great now that they're older. They can tell the stories. We'd go back, you know, and it was like we'd have the conversation. Now you know what you did, right? And I was just really calm, really slow. It just killed them. They just wanted me to spank them. You know, it was just like, now you know what you did, right? You know why I have to do this, right? You know,
you realize I'm going to spank you. I'm going to say spanking really slow as I do, like spank.
Here it comes. and I didn't use the flesh. You know, I didn't use a hand. I used a wooden spoon when it got beyond, you know. Whatever it was, but we only once or twice ever, and then it was like, okay, I don't. Then you just say, hey, here's the deal. I got the spoon with me.
Yeah,
we kept one in the car.
Yeah. I made a case for it.
And it was like, I don't want the spoon. You can choose. You know, if you want that chocolate milk, that's great. But just know that you know there's consequences. And usually they wanted the spoon to not get the spoon more than they wanted the whatever.
That's right. I think that's the bottom line is you discipline defiance.
And we also explained to them, they understood this isn't just my little daddy rule. It was like, we're doing this for your future. We're doing this because this is a principle of you know, we want to point you toward God. We want to point you toward morality and so forth. That was the deal. I mean, you know, if I didn't have a reason for something, I didn't, you know, just.
That's right. You don't, but you're disciplining defiance. You're not disciplining mistakes. You have got to give those kids some room to make some mistakes for everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, on the communication piece, I had apologized to my kids like within the last 2 weeks because I realized that I had allowed them a lot of leeway on how they were speaking to their mom. And some of that had been modeled poorly. Ahem. And so what my kids, like, they just said something just a hit, like over the line sassy to their mom. And I thought that can't continue. And the first thing I thought was, you've permitted this. This is your fault. And so I sat them both down and I said, look, I owe you an apology. I have allowed you to speak in ways to your mom that I should not have. It was disrespectful to her. And I apologize to you because I owed you better than that, than to allow you to do that, to make you seem like that was okay. And so I had to apologize to them. And I said, look, one of the big things I'm apologizing for is that I feel like we're probably in for a rough couple weeks because I've allowed some things and it's given you some leeway that I think it's going to be hard for you to break. And it really does break my heart that I've put you through that because you're going to run through a week, like 2 to 3 weeks of like continuing to do this in which I'm going to have to, there's going to be consequences to those things. And it should not have gotten to that point. And it actually did. It broke my heart because that was my fault. I did that. I failed to set appropriate boundaries for them. I failed my wife and I failed them. But like instead of it wasn't at that point it would have been totally wrong to start yelling at my kids. It's not their fault. It's my fault. I did that. I didn't set the boundaries. Now now that we've talked about it, now it's theirs. Now it's in their court. Now I can walk them through that and I can try to repair some of the things that I didn't guard well. But I think that communication piece is very big. You know, the one thing that really bothers me is I feel so bad for kids when you can tell like they're in trouble and they had no idea. Or I don't get in circumstances where I expect my kids to act differently some other place. How is that kid supposed to know, right? Yeah. You know, you let them do whatever they want wherever, and then they get out in public and you're like, we don't act like that. Well, sure as heck do. Yes, you do.
We do too, jump on the couch.
That's exactly what they do. And you know, and the thing is like, I feel so bad for that kid because like you did that. You set your own kid up to get yelled at and jerked around in public Because you let them do whatever you want at home and you didn't do them a favor. And, like, that is totally your deal. And you need to take responsibility for that. And much of the discipline stuff that I think as Christ followers is taking the responsibility for your kids, right? Is when kids get yelled at, a lot of times you're putting the onus on them. No, it's your responsibility because you didn't act like this. Yes, there are elements of that are accurate, but, like, way more of that sits in your hand. Way more of that sits in your hand. Every time my kid acts, like, it's not always a reflection of you. Kids are still their own people. They're still outside influences that I get that, right? And there are people that can be awesome parents, and their kids are just jack wild. It happens. But, like, the truth is that a lot of times, like, you simply, you know, you move the responsibility from you to them. You looked at them and said, why are you acting this way? Well, I got some thoughts on the matter. I allowed you to act this way. And then I expected you to act like an adult when I changed my mind and just flip a switch. So it's just not cool, and it's irresponsible. And I think a lot of the discipline problems, like when we try to apply God's word to a disciplinary thing, or even our relationship with Christ on how you raise your kids, a lot of the issues that we run into, it's a responsibility shift. You want to point the finger and get upset at a kid. You move part of your responsibility onto your kid, then you got pissed about it. And that's where a lot of that stuff goes awry, is because you didn't take the appropriate responsibility for your kid to begin with.
All right. It seems like from the answer that I gave, I may have been lacking a few things that we've talked about, but it seems like the same deal. I basically just talked about the fact that, you know, when it comes to discipline, it doesn't need to be from a point of emotion. It needs to be from a point of there is a consequence for the defiance that you're dealing with. And I think that's where, from a societal viewpoint, I think that's where their society is drawing a gray line between the concept of abusing your kids and disciplining your kids. And I think that it's not as gray as they make it seem, because I think the one point is from, hey, I'm going to hit you and or discipline you from an anger portion of me. You've done something to defy me, and therefore I'm going to be vengeful and hit you in some way, shape, or form, rather than a godly discipline being, hey, we've talked about this being a consequence of the defiance and the action that you've just taken. You know, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you, whatever you want to say. But this is not from a point of anger. This is a point from love, because I want you to learn from this and know that there are consequences, whether good or bad, for the mistakes, or excuse me, the defiance that you do and the actions that you take. But overall, it ended up to be a good conversation that led into a little bit more. But I just wanted to see from you guys' vantage points on what it seemed like from a Christ follower's viewpoint on what discipline should be with your children. So I appreciate all those answers.
Yeah. I think, and you know, one thing I was thinking, kind of to on broadly, is you really got to look at what you're modeling, like what kind of behavior you're modeling. Like I said, I've apologized to my kids quite a bit, actually. I just hate, like, if I handle something wrong, I feel like if I expect them when we pray at night, like, they know when I'm falling short as a father. They just do. They may not know, like, all the details, but, like, they know. Like, if I've done something not held at my end of the bargain, I say, look, I owe you guys an apology. I'm sorry. I'm working to do better. Because that's the model of repentance that I show to God. It's what I'd like to model to them. If I owe them that, I will. And so I think a lot of it, it's what you model. You can, even in their Christian life, you can't expect them. You can't expect to do the show, do the Sunday show, right? And then expect them to walk away with a healthy relationship with God and, like, say, well, I don't know where it went wrong. Well, like, you didn't. You know, you weren't an example to them. That's where it went wrong. That was part of the responsibility, was to pass that on to them. However firm you felt you were, like, if you didn't model it, I don't know, what do you expect your kids to do? That's the 95% of the time, is that.
No, that's true. There's 5%. There's 5% eating donuts and listening to the worship service, and the rest of your life, you know, where, you know, you didn't bring any type of game at all. That's a problem.
You thought your modeling was you soaked up the game. Right. You soaked up what someone else said. And there's edifying things. There's building people up. I get that. But, like, what did you model it at home?
That's the thing, right? Like, I don't care whether they know Jonah or not, right? Do they know how to repent? Do they know how to pray? Do they know how to talk to their father, right? I do care if they know Jonah. But, like, they get that from Sunday school. Like, they're going to get it 50 times before they get to fourth grade, right? There's only so many G-rated Bible stories. And so, like, Jonah's going to be in there, right? Like, we work on prayer and repentance and calling what your sin is and looking at your life and actually we just started this tonight doing the fruits of the spirit, building up to Valentine's Day. Like, we're gonna do one tonight and go through it and talk about what it is and what it means to get closer to God and like what the fruits of the spirit are and why or whatever. And like, I had a really good conversation with my 6-year-old about it. It was I had no idea, like, I said, what do you think love is? We started with the first one, you know, and it was just it was a very eye-opening conversation, right? But, like, that's the stuff I'm after. That's the stuff that I want to teach. That's the stuff I want her to grow in, you know?
I think one of the things I want to chime in is with the disciplining is just the education. It was such a difference as changing from a worldly dad to a godly man and raising a child. It was one of the things I was doing is when I was punishing Brandon or spanking him and sending him off to his room, I sent him away in anger. And then when I looked at it and started going about it and started calming down and then punishing and then educating and going over why you're being punished and what we can do differently and why this is what God tells us to do and educating him on God and what God wants us to do as his people. I think that's where it was such a big turnaround to where it stopped being physical punishment. It started being more of a, let's take a time to go sit in your room and then come back and let's talk. And I think that's one of the great things is my difference now is my son's walking on the road and I say, Brandon, he stops and turns around and looks at me instead of counting one, two, and there's a car.
I think
that's by far one of my biggest pet peeves, even at the park.
It's
like when I say your name, it's law. Like, turn around.
It's time. And listen, it's good for the kid. Like, I know what you think it sounds like, but it's best for your child that they come when you ask them, when you call their name, that they come looking. Like, it's best for your kid. I mean, when they get to be 10, you could stop expecting that to happen. But, like, until they can start telling the difference between worldly dangers, they turn around when you say their name. It's best for them. It's not authoritarian. It's just in their own best interest.
Isn't that the basic principle of any position in authority? I mean, you set expectations so that you can set people up for success.
That's right.
If they don't know what's expected of them, they can't succeed, thus the spanking, right?
Yeah.
So if you aren't setting that expectation to help them succeed and then also backing it up with how you're living and how you treat your wife and how you do those things around the house, then it's on you.
Yeah.
It's on you.
Man, I don't know how many times I've had to go to my 3-year-old and apologize. Like,
hey, I tell you what.
I did this wrong.
There's something very edifying about that, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
I mean, apologizing to your kids.
And as a result, he'll learn how to apologize to other people.
It was one of the hardest things, just breaking down, looking at the 3-year-old who has no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah. Just being like, I was a worldly man, and I'm sorry. Like,
yeah,
man, mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Then he puts his hand on you and says, let's get some ice cream.
He's like,
okay,
we got this.
Stay up till midnight. Eat some popcorn. Yeah.
Okay, that's too far, though. I love Jesus, but you're still going to bed.
I said 9 o'clock, young man.
Yeah. Don't push it, kid.
Yeah, don't push it.
You got time for one dear life in the path?
What do you
got over there?
Yeah, I got one. Hang on. I wasn't totally prepared for it. The kids and whatnot, you know what I'm saying? Dear life from the path. I am a high school senior. At the beginning of the school year, I agreed to drive my best friend to school in the mornings, and for a while, it was nice. Last month, she started to refuse to talk while I was driving. If I tried talking to her, she wouldn't respond. She recently told her boyfriend, who she texts constantly while riding with me, that she didn't like my driving. I found out because of a post he made on Facebook. Man, this is terribly juvenile. When I asked her about it, she said that the morning I slammed on the brakes and it scared her. This has made me tense and stressed out in the mornings, and I want to stop driving her. My grandma says I should stick it out instead of causing friction. My mom thinks I should stop driving her, but only if she can find another ride. I tried to explain this to her, but she won't listen. I'm still stuck with her. This has ruined our relationship. I feel like she hates me, but I don't know what to do about any of it. Help. Life of the Path, help me. Hey, I tell you what I do. I'm picking that dude up no more.
That's right.
We're done. How dare you sassafras me on a Facebook with your boyfriend? We're done. I'll drive my own car.
I'd do the exact opposite. I'd pick that person up, and then I would just drive like a maniac all around town.
Run over bushes.
Lock the doors.
I'll give
donuts.
You a reason to be scared.
Yeah. Hey, 190 miles an hour down the freeway. How do you like that?
At least I know who not to pick me up from the airport, eh, Barry?
This may or may not be spiritual advice.
Your plane comes in at 11, eh? Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
We can make it.
No problem. Yeah, we'd be done, right? Like, here's only because, and it's not for any other reason, but I can't stand passive-aggressive behavior, right? You don't like my driving, you say so. You know what I'm saying? If you know, drive your own car. Take a bus. There's buses. You know what I'm saying?
Hold on. Just make sure I follow this straight. So junior high, right?
No, high school.
Oh, high school.
High school senior.
Yeah.
This is the mom?
What are you talking about?
Oh, this is the high school senior.
This is the high school senior.
What were you doing while
driving
I was
her friend?
I was taking pictures of Dan. No. Okay.
It's pretty distracting.
It's two gals. Right, okay. One's a senior and one's driving her friend to school.
Oh,
the friend don't like it.
She's telling
her boyfriend to find a new ride,
but she won't say that she doesn't like
why
it.
Why can't
She's
the boyfriend pick her up?
Yeah, that's they didn't include that in the story.
He's busy texting her.
It's the one who's driving that says, hey, look, she won't talk to me. She hates my driving, but she won't tell me, and it's ruining our friendship.
Why don't you just say, hey, do you hate my driving?
Yeah, she says, yeah, she slams on the brakes, and she don't like it.
I would just tell her that God gave her two legs and she can walk. Yeah. Like, that's what I'd tell her.
Yeah, what if she lost a leg, though? That'd be embarrassing. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. I retract that previous
hopefully
statement.
Best friends in high school know how many extremities hey. The other one has.
God gave you two legs. Oh, shoot.
Oh, Cindy, I am so sorry.
I'll be there at 7:30, I guess.
I'll be there at 7:30. I forgot about the accident. My bad.
Step click. Just throwing out there.
You can step click your way to school. Yeah, so I drove a 15-passenger van in high school, and a lot of people asked me for rides, but because I knew how bad my driving was, I decided not to. But in the situation of – whatever. In the situation, I think that you should just tell the lady, just, hey, if you don't like my driving, don't drive with me anymore.
What do you think she's going to say? Oh, no, it's fine. Then what?
Then shut up about it.
Then call her a liar.
Yeah. If that's you're okay with saying, oh, hey, it's fine. I don't mind the way you slam on the brakes in the morning. Don't go talk to your boyfriend about it.
I never said that. Keep going.
I didn't.
Yeah. I'll be the friend.
You never said that, Cindy?
No.
Well, John told me about it. I saw it on Facebook.
My boyfriend's a gossip. He's immature. We're going to break up when we leave high school.
Yeah. I don't think I can talk to you if you're going to wait till the end of high school.
That's because not accurate. Your boyfriend's high school girl would be like, we're getting married.
Exactly. He's a gossip, but I
you're
love
horrible
him.
At this
and my
game.
CDs are in his truck, and I don't want to leave him.
We're moving on. I don't do CDs.
I didn't hear it in iPhone. This letter, but has she like tried to talk at all about this with her friend?
I don't think it
does. Yeah, she
I
says
think
she
that's
refuses.
What she should do.
She says she refuses to talk. I asked her about it. She said that one morning, I slammed on the brakes and it scared her. That's as far as the conversation went.
Yeah, that's a
well. Okay, now
that's
wait
a reason to be is, just desperate friend
true,
to drive
is that
somebody.
True though? Could it all be tied to just the single incident where she slammed on the brakes? It scared her. It's the same time she texted the boyfriend, and the driver's way overreacting.
I mean, it's,
I think that's possible.
Anything's possible with this drama situation we have.
Or it was the 9 mailboxes she drove through. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah,
I think maybe she should. Find some sort of excuse to not be able to take her to school for a few mornings. And
now, what is this passive-aggressive behavior, Baird? Say, listen, I'm not going to put up with your passive-aggressive behavior. I'm just not going to pick you up anymore.
This way you make her think about it.
Okay, let me throw this
it's
out there.
It's her own medicine.
What's the downside?
A taste of her own Benadryl.
Yeah. What's the downside of just letting it go? Let it go.
But you're right. And no one will know it.
I think what she should
it happens. I'd say you let it go.
I think what she should do is go on Facebook, put a post out there that this friend needs a ride to school, and see how many people offer. And they found her a ride.
I mean, personally, if it was me as the driver, I could really give a rip. I mean, yeah. If she's getting a free ride, she can either. I mean, it's not going to make me more tense. I might be a little more like you. I'd probably like be a little extra. Close to cars and maybe a little close to the curb.
Leave a bunch of garbage in your car. Yeah, stop the Casey's 8 times.
But it's like, if she wants to ride, you know, either like it or find somewhere else.
You're not going to forget about it.
Fellas, that's extremely ungenerous. Like, you have a 15 dirty burritos on your passenger seat and you go pick a guy up and you say, that's what you get. You want to ride with me.
I think this is how it goes.
That's how I rule.
New Craigslist ad. Looking for a safe driver that drives with 10 and 2, doesn't pump brakes, driving to Hoover or blank and blank high school.
Nah, you let it go. You just give it up. There's no reason to be part of the charade. Let it go. She's got a gossip of a boyfriend. She told him too much. And she's passive-aggressive. You can't solve the world's problems. Just let it go.
You say just keep picking
her up. I just let it. What is it harming you?
Makes me tense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, I just
said
it
makes Mike angry.
It doesn't make her tense.
It causes me to drive erratically.
No, she needs something to be upset about, so she's claiming it makes her tense.
It gives me gas through first period. My study hall hates me. What am I going to do?
There's the cute boy that sits right behind me.
Oh, Curtis, it wasn't me. Dang it.
It was all because Cindy's so nervous about my driving. I get so tense in the morning.
No, you let it go.
Okay.
What's the secular advice?
Secular's advice says, your former best friend may have stopped talking to you on the way to school because she was too busy texting her boyfriend. She is ignoring the fact that you have been doing her a favor of transporting her and is using you as a private taxi.
Secular's a little catty.
Yeah, a little catty.
He's texting the boyfriend.
Got to be doing it, texting. If she was frightened because you break suddenly, the person she should have said it to was you. So stop explaining to her and tell her that if she wants to continue getting a free ride, she had better adjust her attitude or make other arrangements for transportation.
You're listening live from the Path. Thank you for hanging out here on the podcast so much. Make sure you give a big shout out to our sponsors, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. And the Eisenhower team, specifically Bob. The other guys are cool, too.
Yeah.
But we deal with Bob.
Yeah. We're not allowed to talk to anybody else there.
Let's see. Chris Hager's going to be in the studio next week. That should be a fun show. I got some Pope-style advice that actually might even benefit from Stew in a week. It's a big one on the pot. And we'll hook up with you next week. Thanks for listening. Have a good week.
Sorry, I locked up there.